Thank you.
Or call House has to order. It's, I have about 3 minutes after by this, my time, on the 20th of February. Present, we have Representative Stevens, Cisna, Wilson, Coghill, and Dyson. I understand that Representative Coring and Jewell are, have excused absences. And Representative Jewell, I think, is at Arctic Winter Games, and not what Representative Coring is doing. But for those of you who are here for House Bill 101 at Charter Schools, it is my intention to open the hearing on that today and take any testimony from folks that are here that can't return, but indeed we're not going to act on it. And we've got some amendments coming forward, and frankly, it's got a couple of problems that we realize and appreciate folks tipping us off on. So we won't be acting on it today, but if there's anyone here who, and Representative Coring has joined us, if there's anyone here who can't return on that one, we will give you an opportunity to speak on it today. That's only fair. Any questions, committee members, on that? Representative Coring, it's my intention to not move on House Bill 101 today, and but to take some testimony, and then we'll hold it over. And so any of you who are here just on 101, kind of wanting to watch it, we're not going to do anything. Nothing sneaky will happen today, and so you can go off to more profitable things if you care to. Any questions? All right. First bill up we have today that we're going to then hear is House Bill 37, Student Loan Forgiveness, and then the third one up will be House Bill 41, which I think we had continued from last week, and we had promised to act on today. All right, who's here to make a presentation on House Bill 37? Sir, Representative Stevens.
I do that from here, sir, or out there?
Why don't you go out there? It'd be more fun to look you in the eye here.
Mr. Chairman, committee. Public education is truly at the crossroads. We're demanding more of our students, such as an exit exam, and we're trying to raise student achievement, while at the same time we're facing a statewide shortage of teachers, especially in rural Alaska. The need for qualified and committed teachers has really never been greater. As you know, the Alaska Student Loan Forgiveness Program ended in 1980 and had succeeded in encouraging many students to return to Alaska as teachers. These people established their homes here, they raised their families here, and they became productive members of our community and our state. Today, there is no incentive in the Alaska Student Loan Program that would encourage Alaskans to return home after finishing their education and becoming certificated teachers. As you also know, other states are doing their best to attract and retain teachers. They're using a wide variety of incentives, such as higher salaries, signing bonuses, a down payment on homes, mortgage subsidies, as well as student loan forgiveness. You may have read recently Bradner's Alaska Legislative Digest from February 2nd of 2001. It included a couple of very telling charts. The first one was the percent change in average teacher's salary from 1989 to 1999. It showed that in current dollars, the U.S. average was 37.3%, while in Alaska, it was 12.2%. That's the percent change in average teacher salaries for a 10-year period in current dollars. A second chart showed the percent change in average teacher salary from 1989 to 99 in constant dollars, and this chart shows the U.S. average at 2.8%, while in Alaska it was -16%. Clearly, we're headed in the wrong direction. While the rest of the country has seen a 2.8% increase in teacher salaries in the 10-year period, we here in Alaska have seen a -16% change in the average teacher salary over a period of 10 years. All of this just goes to show that Alaskan teachers' salaries are becoming less and less competitive in the face of a national teacher shortage that we are now all experiencing. This past year, there were unfilled positions across the state in math, special education, speech pathology. For the 1999-2000 school year, 1,335 new teachers were hired in Alaska. On the first day of school, 84 teaching positions were still unfilled, and those remaining were unfilled for several months. Districts were often forced to hire unqualified teachers on emergency certificates, and also teachers with barely minimal qualifications. This bill, which would forgive 10% a year up to a total of 50% for the state student loan program for Alaskans who return to teach in Alaska, I know is not the answer to all of our problems. I know that. And I'd hope that beyond this, we would look at the whole problem at some time in the future. This is just a very small part of the answer. Forgiveness will only be given after an Alaskan student has returned home and taught for a year. And this is a credit on the student loan, not a reimbursement. If we really want to raise student achievement, then we must help solve the statewide teacher shortage. This is absolutely crucial. The entire state benefits when Alaskans return to live here, make their homes here, raise their families here, and fulfill a career here. This partial loan forgiveness, I think, is the least we can do. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Stevens.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Representative Stevens, I appreciate your disclaimer that this isn't all of the answer. But it seems to me, or did you entertain the question of just the equity for someone who doesn't get a state loan but might get a commercial loan or use their own funds, that there's no incentive for them?
You know, I have to say, Chairman, as Chairman, as a former college professor, I don't know many of my students who didn't use the state student loan program. It's a very good program. It's available. It's easily accessible. And as far as I know, most Alaskan students do make use of that loan. I don't know what the percentages are, but most of the students that I know did make use of that state student loan program. But I guess in a sense you may be correct. If someone chooses to go through banks and borrow money, they would not receive any forgiveness through the banks, only through the state loan program.
Yeah. My oldest daughter worked three jobs in order to not be in debt when she graduated. And there's no incentive here for those folks that don't use state loan. Representative Sisner?
Mr. Chair, just a comment, if you please. It seems to me that it would be hard to find incentives that would, this one, it's important that we do find incentives. It's important that we do something to retain teachers. And this one seems to be built into the system already. I personally think it's, my last year of college got a student loan on my BA from University of Alaska, and I don't think I could have been blasted out of here with dynamite, but I had many of my fellow graduating seniors who did make the decision to stay here because they wanted to have the forgiveness, and those people are now part of who laid down a lot of the foundation of the Alaskans who are here to stay, raising their kids, and part of the real stable part of the population. I just think it's a good idea.
Are you going to be a co-sponsor? We can get you one of those little green slips here.
Oh, I better do it.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, Stevens. As I thought about it, may respond a little more clearly to what you've said. When you look across the nation, there are lots of programs where districts are trying to find ways to recruit and retain teachers. And the loan program is only a portion of it, just a very small portion there. As I say, there are lots of other things going on. States are doing all sorts of things, bonuses and that sort of thing. This is just a small part of it, but it is, I think, an important part of it for many students.
What is, Representative Stevens and Dyson, what is the present forgiveness rate? Is there any?
Presently, there is no forgiveness rate, but maybe Ms. Behrens will answer that. I think she's here, or was here, but as far as I understand, there is no forgiveness rate for the student loan program today.
Is that correct, Dan? Any student loans?
No, there is a small.
Can you go up here so we can pick you up on the mic? Identify yourself for the record.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Strictly speaking, Representative Stevens is correct. There is not in the general Alaska student loan program a forgiveness benefit under the contracts that are currently being issued. There are some existing benefits from those pre-1988 loans where we continue to pay out benefits as they're claimed. The only other programs that have some forgiveness benefits are unique targeted programs such as the Alaska Teacher Scholarship Loan Program, which has a requirement on the front end that you have graduated from a high school in Alaska and that you be nominated by a rural school district in Alaska to receive the loan. And then, assuming you complete your degree, you would have to teach in a rural or bush school in order to receive the benefits under that program. The benefits under that program are 100% forgiveness of your debt.
I think that's what I was remembering. But do you call it a scholarship rather than a loan?
Alaska Teacher Scholarship Loan. It's a bit confusing, frankly, as to the title.
All right. Thank you. Maybe you could stay. We may ask more questions.
In fact, the question that I'm going to ask first to Representative Stevens, and then maybe Ms. Behrens has the answer as well. What do you anticipate would be the contract that would show the hire? I'm just curious what the mechanism would be to show that tenure or the employment time. Have you anticipated an answer to how are they going to prove this?
How the student will prove that they have taught a year before they're forgiven. Ms. Behrens will be much better answering this than I am, but you have to have taught a year in a school district in Alaska to be able to apply for that forgiveness. And so it occurs over a period, actually, of, I think, 6 years. If you stayed for 6 years, you might be forgiven the whole 50%, but I really better let the experts answer that question.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Coghill, I have thought about the nuts and bolts of how we would do that. And currently, the Department of Education receives data from the school districts as to who their teachers are. We would probably require that those teachers who wanted to receive the benefit file and claim that benefit. We would verify their employment through the Department of Education and accept that as verification that they were employed as a teacher in Alaska.
And that was just the nuts and bolts of it, thinking there may be area for dispute there, that's all I think.
But you'll get the Social Security number on it, right? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Stevens, if there's a teacher out there this year that is teaching this year and they hear about this, if this passes, then would they qualify?
I don't believe so. It's not a retroactive issue. I don't think someone teaching this year would be able to apply for that forgiveness. It would have to be someone starting next school year. I believe that's right. Is that true, Dan? It takes effect July 1st, 2001.
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the latest version of the bill doesn't speak specifically. Yes, it does. I'm sorry. It's loans entered into, if you'll look on page 2, line 11, the act applies to loans entered into on or after July 1, 2001. So, in fact, our current borrowers now, unless they continued to borrow with this next loan year, would not have a loan that qualified for a benefit. So it's totally prospective, and it would be just individuals who continue to or begin to borrow as of July 1 of 2001.
Representative Wilson to continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is just a follow-up then. So this, we wouldn't be noticing anything for 2 years, because it would be the next school year. Then at the end of the next school year, which would be 2002, at the end of that school year, then they could apply. Oh, first of all, they would have to take the loan out, so they wouldn't be
They would have already had the loan, I'm assuming.
It's an accumulative thing, Representative Wilson, and if you, say, graduated from high school this year and started a five-year program to get a master's and a certificate, it would be five more years before you could apply for this, and then it would be another year before you get your first year's forgiveness. So 6 years from now, you'd apply for the first year, and then seven on through the next 5 years.
That was Representative Stevens. Representative Wilson,
okay,
to continue.
Thank you. Follow-up. Okay, but wonder if there's somebody that's already in school right now. They've got another year yet to go, so they apply for that last year of that school loan this coming year. So that after that, then they would have to teach for a year. So that would, they maybe might graduate by then. So they would have, that'd be 2 years from now, but they could apply and get, what about, can they get the last year? How does that work?
Barron's.
The motion sitting right here.
Not yet. Mr. Chair, Representative Wilson, yes. In fact, that last year that they received, once the bill went into effect, that last year's loan would be subject to up to 50% forgiveness if they taught for a total of 5 years.
Ms. Barron's, when does a loan recipient start making payments?
Mr. Chair, the repayment period begins 6 months after they separate from school, so either they leave school or they cease full-time study. So 6 months later.
All right, so thank you. So, Mr. Representative Stevens, if the loan recipient graduates, starts teaching in Alaska school, they make a payment after 6 months, but they can't get the forgiveness of that first year for a year, and you previously said that they wouldn't get reimbursed, I've got cognitive dissonance.
Well, you might have a point there that there's a six-month period they've already paid for their loan, and they would not receive that money back. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, because they would only receive up to 50% forgiveness, they will still have to repay the other 50% balance on their loan. So they should get the full benefit available to them if they teach for all 5 years.
Marvelous recovery.
I'm so glad you're sitting here.
Representative Stevens, how did you decide that 50% was the right percentage of forgiveness?
Well, sir, it's a, how can I explain this? I guess I had some hopes that the legislature might be willing to pay the bill on 50%, but had some question about whether we'd get the support to go to 100% or to include other occupations in this loan forgiveness. So this is a calculated thing. I was hoping that we could get the support for 50%, but I didn't think we'd get it for 100%.
Yeah, I suspect it was something like that, and I appreciate that. At least in a couple of areas of the state that I'm very familiar with, there is a crisis with special ed teachers, and not only not able to get them, but not able to keep them. Is, to your knowledge, is that a problem in your area? And is the special ed crisis disproportionate to the other education skills that you mentioned?
Well, I think you're right, Mr. Chairman. I think that in special ed and in math, there are significant problems throughout the state. The problem is felt in my district as well as every other district in the state. Yeah. But there are areas, there are teaching, you know, categories that are worse off than others, that's for sure.
Any other questions in the committee? Representative Coghill.
Just thinking about somebody who's in school now and sees this coming and wants to get involved in this. What are the possibilities of refinancing a loan? And I'm trying to think like a student now. Oh boy, I see this, and maybe I can roll this all into one and then bring it all about where I'll go ahead and teach, but I'd like to bring the first 2 years alone up to the last 2 years or whatever. Is that something that is on the radar screen?
Well, I'm sure Ms. Barron's going to maybe answer that better than I, but I, as far as I know, I don't think so. I believe that you've entered into a contract with the state, with the student loan program. You've made an agreement through a period of 5 years of school that you would repay that. So as far as I know, there's no consolidation of student loans, through the state.
Representative Burr. Ms. Barron?
He's going to get you yet.
I hope I'm being prophetic.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, the commission has a statutory authority to offer consolidated loans. However, it has not developed a product to consolidate loans. We would have to consider the financial implications of doing so, and certainly would have to consider the implications on the legislative willingness to finance any forgiveness benefits that could accrue to someone through a refinanced loan.
Representative Coghill?
Which brings me to the other point. This is totally up to a GF number that's put in by the Finance Committee at the end of the day, I think. This is not a mandate in any way. True.
Mr. Chair, Representative Coghill, that's why I'm here today to testify to that fact. It will be a general fund appropriation to finance this program, and the limitations as to how far it will go and how many it will affect will be based on that fiscal note. Should the program be put into statute and not receive subsequent appropriations, it would become a unfunded mandate, but not one that the corporation would put itself in the position of being liable for.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Stevens, would this count towards someone that was a school librarian? Now, let me kind of I would like to read a little bit from one of my constituents. I got it says, today's school librarian is a certified elementary or secondary school teacher with an endorsement of approximately 30 additional credits in the field of school librarianship. Each day, school librarians instruct students and often their teachers on the use of reference materials and so on and so forth. Would that person qualify for this?
Well, that's a very good question, Representative Wilson. And certainly, any certificated teacher would be able to apply for this, and that would certainly include librarians who are certificated teachers. There are librarians that may be support staff that are not certificated, so they would not be eligible, but they would not have received probably a master's degree or maybe not even, it depends on the individual. But this is any certificated teacher, and all of the librarians I can think of that I know in school districts are certificated.
I just wanted to, that was a concern, so I wanted to clarify that.
Ms. Barron's, would you let Beth come up and sit in your seat?
Hello, I'm Beth Nordland from the Department of Education and Early Development.
Thanks, Beth. Welcome back. Can you give us any idea of the magnitude of the shortage we have in specific education categories?
Well, I have some testimony prepared to talk about the teacher shortage in general. The State Board of Education is very concerned about the teacher shortage, and you have in front of you a resolution from the board on teacher loan forgiveness, and mainly it addresses the shortage issue. But I myself don't have statistics on specific areas of shortage. The Alaska Teacher Placement Center works on that, and I think they have a new report coming out this month, which should give us a better update on the areas of shortage around the state.
I saw that yesterday.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. The last one I saw, I think, was from 1998 or 1999.
Well, maybe Representative Coghill, as usual, knows more than the rest of us. Can you speak generally? I mean, I know we've had this crisis with special ed teachers. Representative Stevens says we have a problem with math teachers. What else do you know that we have a problem with? Or maybe your hired gun there knows.
Well, I've heard science is another area of shortage. I guess I can't add any firsthand additional categories to the areas of shortage. It certainly depends on the area. We have serious regional shortages. And then in some of the urban areas, they're suffering more specific shortage in the area of special education. But there are many regions of Alaska that are having difficulty hiring teachers, I think, altogether.
Yeah. And am I correct in assuming that the Alaska Teacher Scholarship Loan that Ms. Barron spoke to is aimed at addressing the rural student?
It is aimed at addressing the rural teacher shortage, yeah, to hire local teachers. It's the supply of rural teachers for the rural areas.
Yeah, that's right. So, okay, yeah, thank you for straightening me out on that. Do you have any other testimony that you wanted to give, Beth?
I sure do. Are you ready for it?
If it's all right with Representative Stevens.
Yes, just one segment. I just make one comment, Mr. Chairman. The student scholarship program is really a wonderful program, but it does zero in on rural education, rural districts. But more than that, I think my concern about the program is that it requires a student at the age of 17 to make the decision that they want to become a teacher and to spend the next their senior year applying for colleges, and then the next 5 years working on 4 years of a bachelor's, 5th year of a master's. So I think you're asking a lot of a 17-year-old to make that commitment at that time to become a teacher and follow through to the end. That's why we see such a bad repayment of that scholarship when people decide not to teach. So I think you have to keep that in mind, that this is not necessarily the answer to all of our problems, to ask a 17-year-old to make a lifetime commitment.
Randy, who else do we have wants to testify on this bill? Who in the room here wants to testify on this bill? Okay. Representative Stevens, in the 35 years that I've been married to a teacher, we have watched the demand for teachers be quite cyclic. 35 years ago, you could go anywhere and get a job, and there's been a couple of times when it was tough to find a job. What will happen in the out years here if, as a result of your heroic efforts, we have a glut of teachers and no demonstrable public need in the state? What will happen to this? And we have all kinds of people saying, boy, I'm going to, well, I guess if they couldn't get a job, they wouldn't go for it. That would limit it out itself, right?
Mr. Chairman, I guess my concern would be that we would pay the price in this generation or the next generation's children who are not adequately taught, who don't have teachers that have been adequately trained. You're right, there is a cycle that we experience in teaching, but it does seem like it's particularly a bad one right now, and it's across the nation. I haven't seen, in my lifetime, I haven't seen such a shortage of public school teachers as there is right now.
All right. Do you have anything else?
No, sir.
Beth, you're up.
You have in front of you the State Board of Education's resolution on teacher loan forgiveness, and a few pages from the Senate bill, the public school funding report, which some of you may know to be called the Senate Bill 36 report we gave this year to the legislature. One of the pieces is on educational adequacy. So I'll just hit some of the highlights of the resolution in that report, if you don't mind. Quality teachers and administrators are a crucial component for raising student achievement. Alaska is experiencing a statewide shortage of teachers and administrators. Teacher and administrator turnover is at best disruptive and at worst disabling to education reform, and especially acute problem in rural Alaska. And states all across America are going to great lengths to attract and retain teachers and administrators, offering a wide variety of incentives. And demographic trends make it unlikely that Alaska educational institutions will be able to produce more than one-third of the teachers our schools need each year. Alaska's educational institutions currently only supply our public schools with 30% of the teachers that we need. There's more information in this educational adequacy that I've stapled to that. There's a section on teachers in that report that I just want to highlight some of the pieces that we've talked about. Many states and outside school districts offer incentives such as signing bonuses, down payment on homes, mortgage subsidies, and student loan repayment programs. Due to limited resources, Alaska school districts continue to struggle to be competitive with other states and outside school districts when recruiting teachers. Many of you have probably heard of some of the things that have happened with other states actually coming to our job fairs and recruiting the teachers that are at our job fairs for Alaska's jobs. So we are definitely in a competitive situation with other states. And as part of the educational adequacy report, we include a list here of examples of teacher incentives offered in other states. And there's a short list of states that offer scholarship loan programs. But you can see what the other states are doing in this area, and many legislatures around the nation are dealing with the same issues. I guess the last thing I'd like to say is the next report that the legislature received from us is this Education Funding Task Force report, and I've supplied it to the committee. There's a concept that is in that report that the governor is going to be introducing a bill on, and it's called loan assumption, teacher loan assumption. And the concept, I've briefed Representative Stevens' office on it, is that no matter where, it's a hiring tool so that a school district can offer to take over a teacher's loan, but they may be from anywhere in the nation in an accredited program. And they would be, if they got hired as a teacher in Alaska, then the state would take over that loan payment up to $2,000 every year or $10,000 total. So it's an idea that is different from loan forgiveness in that it costs more, but it is a hiring tool, and it's an incentive for people to come to Alaska to be teachers. More than 70% of our teachers in the state really are from outside institutions, and we will be importing teachers for the foreseeable future. We are not going to be able to handle our own demand for teachers. So I think that the board and the governor are very interested in giving school districts another hiring tool, which is not to say that forgiveness is not another tool that can be used, but it's a different kind of incentive. It's an incentive to have people go to school on the Alaska student loan, so Alaskans then come back to Alaska to teach. Different tool.
Beth Dyson, let's see, at least in my packet here, the page behind the resolution you read from the state board has a pie chart. Do you have that?
I didn't distribute that. I distributed a handout, which is probably outside of your...
Okay.
So, where did we get this?
Mr. Chairman, this is from the Alaska Teacher Placement Organization, and that is in Fairbanks, is it right there? In Fairbanks. Anyway, that's where that came from.
I'm sorry, that's for the Fairbanks School District?
No, Doug, could you, University of Alaska Fairbanks, the Alaska Teacher Placement.
Ah, all right. That was Representative Stevens. Dyson again. So do I read that correctly, that we have 1,100 school, full-time school vacancies in the state?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I don't know. Maybe Doug Letch could...
Doug Letch from Representative Stevens' office. We got this information from Melissa Hill, who is the director or coordinator of the teacher placement program up at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I believe the last total we had back in early January, before we brought this to the Special Committee on Education, there was 136.5 or something vacancies in the state this year that hadn't been filled. I think this is referring to the amount of teachers' positions that are out there.
Total. In the state. All right.
That's what I'm getting out of the chart.
That's a more rational number. All right. If that's true, it sure makes the point that I was stressing before, that the shortage on special ed teachers is chronic, or is the highest profile one. All right. Thank you. Anything else, Beth?
No.
All right. Then we'll take, who else has signed up to speak to us? Randy?
Lois Peterson, who is the state coordinator for school librarians, is going to be calling in for the next 2 days.
All right.
And she will make the statement that librarians are hired as librarians, not teachers, under a teacher contract. So without that in there, they would not be covered.
Is that your understanding, Representative Stevens?
No, sir, it's not. Anyone who is a certificated teacher and is working in a school district in a certificated position, and librarians are certificate positions, would be able to apply for forgiveness. So I don't see that as a problem, but I'm anxious to hear what the individual has to say.
And it is on the record your intention that certificated teachers who are serving as librarians qualify?
Certainly, as well as people in special education who you may or may not consider a teacher, but they certainly are, and they are in certificated positions.
Yeah, because we want that on the record, that's a legislative intent here.
The intent that librarians, certificated librarians, would be included in this loan forgiveness.
Okay. All right. Who else here wants to testify on this bill? It's in the room. Sir, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Sean Riley, and I'm representing myself as a private citizen. I am back to school as an older student, and I'm pursuing a teaching degree. And so to some degree, I can speak for that voice. I am in support of Representative Stevens' bill as it stands right now. And something that I'm hearing quite a bit at this hearing today, for one, a lot of good questions, very pointed questions by the representatives. And seems like a lot of times when a good bill comes aboard, a lot of people want to hop aboard with it. For example, you say, well, gee, what about some other fields? And what about people that have gone to school or are presently in school? Can't they jump aboard also? Well, as you all know, you have to be fiscally responsible, and I think that the representative wrote this bill fiscally responsible, in that by pointing towards the needs in the state that are voicing themselves very loudly, that teachers need to be put into positions here in the state, and we need to bring our people back to the state to fill those positions. Therefore, instead of putting too many people on the raft and sinking it, if we just keep hold of the people that address this bill, I think we'll do well. also, I don't think that there is a friction between whether or not you forgive loans, address those needs by forgiveness of loans, as opposed to loan incentive programs, bringing teachers in from the other states. In other words, I think that there is so many teaching positions needed in this state that not only do we need the teacher scholarship loan program, not only do we need the loan forgiveness clause, but we also do need those incentive programs. Because I spoke, for example, with Dave Marvel, who heads the master's program for teachers out at the UAS here, and he was saying well into the late fall of this year, there was still over 40 positions that were still not filled throughout the state for teachers. So it's obvious that there is a great need, and it still isn't being met. And I think if we attack by all the angles, we would be addressing the needs. And I think Representative Stevens' bill is very fair and, as I said, fiscally responsible. And I encourage you to consider this bill.
Thank you. We are considering, and I suspect you also mean that we pass it. any questions of Mr. Riley? All right. Thank you. Lois Peterson, are you online, Lois? Lois Peterson, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, please give us your testimony.
Yes, I wanted to mention a point of clarification on the regard to have a regard to school librarians. If there's any questions as to whether school librarians would be included in the bill that you're addressing, I'd like to make sure that is stated within the bill. School librarians they play the role of teachers every day, and there is no question that there are more positions, more existing positions, than there are qualified school librarians to fill those positions. And so any encouragement that we can give to having teachers go back to school to become school librarians, that would be something that should be addressed in this bill. School librarians are teachers to start with. They are certified teachers, and they have additional training beyond that in order to qualify them for a library position. So they are teachers, but in their contract description, they are listed as either school librarians or as district librarians. And so unless the note is made that they are to be considered teachers in this particular sense, they may be overlooked.
So, thank you, Lois. So it's your testimony that there are people in the state who are employed in our public schools as librarians who are certificated, but wouldn't qualify?
I'm concerned with the language of the bill, that it doesn't specifically say. It says people hired as teachers, working as teachers. Even though they are teachers, they are hired and classified as school librarians. They are working on a teacher contract. So I would just hope that the language would include teachers and school librarians who are certificated.
All right. Thank you. Is there any questions of Lois? Do you have any questions of Representative Stevens?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the comments. Certainly there's no intention to exclude certificated librarians. And I would have no objection if you wanted to amend this in any way, but I would just want to make sure that it is clear that we're not talking about all librarians. We're only talking about librarians who are certificated teachers.
Exactly. That would be my wish also. And I would like to have it amended to specify that it would include certificated librarians.
And Lois, if I could ask you a question, Representative Stevens, are there other fields that we might be inadvertently omitting by not mentioning, say, special ed teachers? Or are there others that you would think that, because it seems to me when you say certificate of teacher, you're talking about everyone who has finished a degree and has a certificate.
Perhaps if we just say that a school district employee hired under a teacher contract, that that would be that would clarify it so that we wouldn't leave out anyone who might have a different job specification.
But my concern, Mr. Chairman, is that sometimes districts hire people when they can't find the right number of teachers. They hire people who are not certificated in positions that are intended for certificated teachers. So I guess my concern is we might get a real, a verbal quagmire here. That's my concern, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Stevens. Would this work on? Let's see, I'm looking at the A version here. Is that the copy you're working off of?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, not that one.
Yes, sure. We have a C version.
I don't have the C version.
Okay.
I've got an A and a J.
Yeah, so
I can't. All right. Maybe for the purposes of discussion here, on my line 8, it starts out line 7, is employed at a public elementary or secondary school within the state under a teacher under a contract as a certified teacher.
Or it's, well, here it says school librarian.
That's the wrong version. We don't have that before us.
I don't have the right one then.
You've got A here.
I just gave you C, sir.
I know. I don't know if everybody else has. We need to get more copies of C.
This one isn't.
That we still lines still be the same. So would something like that language work under a certified teacher contract?
If it didn't say hired as a teacher, if it says if someone hired under a certified teacher contract, that I think would be more clear and more inclusive.
Do you have a problem with that, Representative Stevens?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I have a problem with it, as long as we are sure that it also covers counselors and principals who are also certificated and have been hired in those positions.
Okay. Beth, do you have an opinion on this?
I'm working under the same knowledge that Representative Stevens has. It's limited, but there are all sorts of certified teachers out there, and librarians are part of that. So I don't have any more specific knowledge than that. I'm sorry.
Do you? We have a representative from NEA here. Do you want to come up and testify? Somebody getting us all to see.
Members of the committee, again, we want to
identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. Vernon Marshall, Executive Director of NEA Alaska. We have testified in support of House Bill 37. I think in this discussion, as you add librarians, you might also want to think about counselors, particularly with all the work that we're doing in the area of standards and testing. I do want to just address one part of the bill, and that is on the second page, line 11.
I'm sorry. I invited you up here specifically to comment on this particular section that we're talking about.
Okay. I would add counselors in that.
But is the objection that Lois raises here, is it your knowledge that librarians may not be qualified because of the language it says here they are employed as a teacher?
That's a concern that was raised in our mind. When you use the term employed as a teacher, the question comes up, is a teacher a librarian? Is a teacher a counselor?
Yeah.
I think you could clarify it if you could say, employed as a teacher or librarian or counselor.
Okay. All right. Well,
Chairman, should that also include principals as well?
Well, I mean, I see where a principal does have a teaching or has had a teaching certificate, but I mean, you could, to clarify it and make your intent clear, you might want to include administrators such as principals.
And I assume, Representative Stevens Dyson, that it is your intention to offer this to all of the professional educators that are working in the school?
Yes, sir.
Not the janitors or the cooks?
All certificated people, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so that's the language we're trying to work towards. And we can offer that as a conceptual amendment.
Certainly.
And get the drafters to help us with it. Representative Wilson?
I'm looking at a section of another bill that includes what a teacher means.
Yeah.
And could we incorporate that, because
that one will come up in the J version here when we get done with the public testimony. You're right, that might solve it.
And could you read that, Representative Wilson?
It says, in this section, teacher means a person who for compensation instructs students in a public or private elementary or secondary school and who possesses a valid teacher certificate. Teacher also includes a person employed as a public or private elementary or secondary school librarian or a school counselor.
Right, that could solve our problem.
Certainly.
All right. Vernon, you want to continue your testimony irrespective of this specific issue, and thank you for your help.
Thank you. Again, want to reiterate that we do appreciate
Vernon
Mr.
Maxwell.
Chairman, my name is Vernon Marshall, Executive Director of NEA Alaska. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we again appreciate, for the third time, Representative Stevens introducing the bill, and we have testified in support of it. However, I would like to just go to line 11, and that is the applicability section of the bill, and it was addressed earlier relative to the bill applying to loans entered to on or after July 1, 2001. The way we read that, assuming that you are in a four-year program and you get through the minimum of 4 years and you achieve your degree, that individual is going to be out of school in the year 2005. Then they're going to teach 5 years, and basically they will achieve 50% loan forgiveness in about 2010. We're looking at a situation where we have an immediate need for teachers, and also the incentive that goes along with looking at a loan forgiveness program, saying that that's adequate incentive. You know, I'm ready to jump in this, go through 4 years, teach 5 years, and then in 2010 have roughly half my loan forgiven. We would like to recommend that you consider a person who applies for a loan on or after July 1, 2001, or has enrolled in an undergraduate or graduate program entered into on or after July 1, 1997, for which loans have been made under the Alaska Student Loan Program. The only reason I use 1997 is that if you have persons who are in teacher education now, and let's assume they've used the necessary 4 years to get their undergraduate degree, they started in 97-98, that academic year. So if you have a person now who's completed that four-year program and is being entertained by other industry or other commercial interests, whether it's in our state or outside of our state, if they knew that they were eligible for a student loan or to begin the piece of loan forgiveness in 2001-2002, you might be able to tap a pool or enhance the teaching pool immediately if you go back and you capture at least 97-98.
Well said, Vernon.
Thank you.
Any questions for Vernon? Representative Coghill.
I think while Ms. Behrens is here, we might want to just ask what might be an impact that if we did go back and capture from 97 forward.
Ms. Behrens?
For the record, Diane Behrens. Mr. Chair, Representative Coghill, the GF impact of a change of that kind would be considerable. I know that Representative Stevens has been interested in trying to find the point at which the bill could succeed but not fail under the weight of a fiscal note. And so he requested that we look at a slight retrospective application of the benefits to individuals who graduated on or after January of 2000. In FY02, the estimated impact would be a $1.4 million GF appropriation. In 03, 16, 04, 19, by 07, it would be $3 million a year.
Yep. Ms. Behrens, Dyson, how many education majors are in the University of Alaska system currently, approximately?
Mr. Chair, because this doesn't limit the benefits to people in the University of Alaska, we looked at the entire database of education majors and those that had graduated with education majors, and we based our estimates on the number who were currently teaching in the state. And so that's where those estimates come from. They're based on the current level of debt, based on the current number of educators who had loans and are teaching in Alaska. And I do, just responding to the issue of applicability in terms of certificated or teaching, the fiscal note before you only looked at people who are actually teaching. They're employed as teachers.
And have loans.
Yes.
So, and you're then, that's Dyson and Ms. Behrens, and you're assuming are teaching, have loans, would apply, and would stay teaching to get to your fiscal note.
That's correct. It is based on individuals who are borrowers, have a certain level of debt, and are teaching in
and
Alaska.
And will continue.
Yes.
Interesting.
They might. Mr. Chair, they would.
Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They would keep teaching if there was a forgiveness. I mean, there's only a certain percentage that's kind of important.
All right.
But yeah, with the chair's permission, just to make it clear, if it's clarified in the bill that these other professionals who are not actually teaching but are certificated are to be included, there would be an effect on the fiscal note as it currently stands. I read the current version of this bill to mean precisely what it says, and that someone must be employed as a teacher.
Ah, so the fiscal note does not include librarians or counselors.
No, it does not.
Making the point of Lois. Interesting. Who else is here that would like to testify? Thank you, Ms. Behrens. All right. You want to, anything further you want to say from that position, Mr. Stevens?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very interesting things we've heard today. The governor's loan assumption program that is out there, and apparently at some time will be presented to us. Sounds like a very interesting program as well, but it's not exclusive of this one. It may very well assist some of the same people and pick up some of their loans, but it is not an exclusive thing. And I believe that we will also reach a lot of people this way, and in a lot less economically effective. You know, I think the cost will be much higher of the governor's program than of this one. A couple of things I've heard along the way as we've talked about this is that people have a tendency to stay where they were educated, and I think that's a good thing to remember, is that those a third of the teachers each year apparently come from the University of Alaska system, and so they have every likelihood of, staying in Alaska and teaching in Alaska. I also think that people that we, Alaskans who have gone out to other places in, the state to and the nation to receive their education, if we can find a way to bring them back, this might very well be an effective way to do that. And certainly I think that once somebody has taught in Alaska for 5 years, there's probably a pretty good chance that they will have a tendency to teach their entire careers here. So I think it's only for the good for Alaskans. Remember, we're talking about Alaskan students, Alaskan children who decide they want to become teachers. These are the ones that we are affecting, and I think it's really our obligation, and certainly to our advantage, if we can convince those people to come back to Alaska and, pursue a teaching career here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I'm going to pass the gavel to the Vice Chair, Madam Chair.
Representative Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. Madam Chair, I'd like to move committee substitute the J version 22LS028/287/J with a modification on line 20, page 2. After secondary school librarian, add the phrase or counselor.
Okay, so we're done with this one that we just did.
Well, and
I'd get for discussion. Okay. First of all, I don't have the J version.
I think we
I
should.
I got an A and I got a C.
J is stapled to the top of your thing right there, to your folder here. Right.
Maybe it's in back here.
All right.
It's hidden.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Just Mr. Representative.
Thank you. Oh, and also on line 6, page 2, after the word, if the borrower is a special education teacher, before the colon, I would add, or teaches in a rural school. Where did Beth go? Excuse me, if I may. Beth, does it is the word rural a term of art within that means anything in state statute? Is that?
I'm not qualified to answer that.
Pardon? All right. If I may, or is employed in an REAA school?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
There's a problem with that, yes. If I could speak.
Sure. Oh, ask the chair.
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman.
Representative.
We're getting into a quagmire here, but I know, for example, in my district, in Kodiak, we have urban schools and we also have rural schools, and those rural schools are the small village schools. So they are considered rural even though they are not a part of an REAA. They are part of a regular borough school district.
And I do want to make a comment, because in my school system it's the same way. We're considered rural, although we're not a member of the REAA. Representative Dyson, do you want to go ahead?
Why don't you recognize Ms. Behrens?
Ms. Behrens, would you like to come up and speak on that?
Yes, Madam Chair. There is actually a definition of rural that the committee may want to look at. The precise site escapes me. I believe it's 1443.300 in the definition section, and it's the one that is used with the Alaska Teacher Scholarship Loan Program. What it does is it describes a community size and its relationship on road or rail to Anchorage, Fairbanks, or Juneau. And so there's two different tiers. One is a community of up to 5,500, I think, that is on road or rail, and then there's a smaller cap, population cap, for one that, or vice versa. Anyway, there is a definition.
Representative Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So in moving the J version here, this is a conceptual amendment that accomplishes, I think, three things. It raises the incentive level for the loan forgiveness to 75% for special education teachers and those teaching in rural schools, as per the definition Ms. Behrens just gave, that is used in the rural scholarship teacher's scholarship loan program. Secondly, it includes, make sure that librarians and counselors are covered as the maker or the sponsor of the bill has stated on the record that he intended. All right. So those are the substantive portions of the amendment that I am proposing to the bill. And please, Representative Stevens, I'm not married to this, and I will vote this out of committee whether or not this version goes forward. I think what I'm trying to accomplish here is worthwhile, but it's your decision on this is your bill, and you can do what you want. I'm also not irrevocably committed to the 75%, just as, you know, I'm not absolutely sure that that's the best number, just as you weren't absolutely sure on the 50%, and I'm open to any suggestions on that.
Representative Dyson, I have a question for you, though.
Are you going to give me back the chairship?
Not yet. Because, now, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what you just did.
Okay.
Are you making an amendment for his bill, or are you just saying this in your bill? Because I'm not.
You're right. I moved the committee substitute and amended it.
Okay.
And then I tried to make it clear on the record that this is a conceptual, and so that the drafter can clean up any internal inconsistencies due to my misspeaking or acting unartfully in the language.
And I'm maintaining my objection until I understand it.
Representative Coggins.
Madam Chairman, I think that we're talking about a significant rise in the fiscal cost on this thing, and I think if we are serious about giving out an incentive, we need to give out what I think is doable. I think that this is going to be a significant chunk. We get the Finance Committee. My guess would be it'd be pared back significantly, or not funded at all, or just held in the hopper. There is a teacher shortage. I think we should aim at the teachers. Special education definitely falls in that category. They're certificated. I can understand the need for the rural teachers. There's a significant need and a significant need for incentive. I understand that, but I think we're looking at a cost that would go beyond what we're going to be able to handle.
Any other comments? Worth a scratch? Okay. Turn it back over to Representative.
Is any further discussion on the amended committee substitute? Representative Stevens.
Mr. Chair, with all due respect, I truly do respect what your amendment says, and if I had my druthers, I would do it with probably a complete forgiveness and include everyone that comes back to Alaska. But I guess I have to respond to what Representative Coghill has said, and I think he really has kept his eye on the ball here about whether this is doable or not. And I just fear that once we start adding additional elements here, that we are making it less and less likely that it would find its way through the legislative process. So, again, with all due respect, I frankly think at this point I have amended my thinking. I think we need to aim at teachers, as Mr. Coghill has said, leave it as simple and as clean as possible, and to that point I would object to the, or would vote, tend to vote against the amendment.
Any other discussion? All right, clerk, call the roll.
Mr. Chair, are we voting on the amendment or the bill itself?
The amendment.
The amendment.
The committee substitute.
On the committee substitute, and the committee substitute again just has teachers. No, it doesn't.
We'll go back to discussion.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, yeah. The committee substitute adds a 75% incentive or 75% forgiveness for special ed teachers and those who teach in rural areas per the definition that Ms. Behrens used. It also makes it clear that it includes librarians, certificated librarians and counselors in the forgiveness.
Which is, in fact, adding significantly to the fiscal note. Okay, are we back to the vote?
All right, we'll now vote on the committee substitute as amended. Representative Wilson.
I'm sorry, this is so confusing because there's three different bills here in my packet. And so we're still on the amendment that you was taken out of this one bill to put in Stevens' bill. Is that what you're talking about?
It's not
no,
the bill.
No, we put the committee substitute on the floor.
So we're not even talking about Stevens' bill.
Right. It's the committee substitute that's before us as amended.
J version.
The J version.
So we're not talking about the bill that he just talked about. We're talking about a different bill entirely.
Well, there's only a couple of lines that are, a few lines that are different, but.
And this bill includes, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevens, or Sisna.
So the bill that we were originally looking at, the version we were looking at, is no longer on the table. The only one includes, includes the counselors and the librarians and a 75% of the teachers, right? And right. There is no longer the original.
If this fails, we'll be back with
the original.
Yes.
Thank you. I needed that clarification.
Representative Stevens.
Chairman, so if I understand this, if both the amendment and the committee substitute failed, then we're back at the original. So we're talking.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Now, it was my intention that I was moving the committee substitute, the J version, as amended.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yes. All right.
So we'll have one vote. If it fails, then we're back to your original. Representative Wilson.
Okay. The difference between that original and this one is the 75%, and this one includes librarians and counselors, and the other one doesn't.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, I understood Representative Stevens to say that he thought or understood that his original included the teachers and the counselors, or the counselors and librarians, and I would anticipate that if this fails, that he may have some further comments on that.
Mr. Chairman, this is very hard to deal with something that that you think is very important, as I know you've all been in this position often. Again, I think it's just really important that we keep to the basics here. And so as much as I would like to include the 75% for special ed, I do believe it's best to return that to the same level as the original bill. So at this point, I think that we should fail the committee substitute and get back to the original, where we can discuss if there are any changes the majority would like to make to that. But I would just encourage us to even stay with that the way it is.
All right. We now have before us the amended committee substitute, J version. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Sisna?
Not happily, but it's a no.
Representative Wilson?
Same. Not happy with a no.
Representative Coghill?
No.
Representative Coring?
Yes.
Representative Stevens?
No.
And Chairman Dyson?
Yes. All right. The committee substitute as amended fails. We have back before us, and Representative Stevens, I think you should make it clear on the record that we are working from the C version. That's your intention.
Yes, sir. We are working from the C version, if you have that. And just to point out what the C version does not include, it does not include... it does include a 50% forgiveness. It does not include a 75% forgiveness for special ed. It does not include librarians and counselors.
All right. Representative Stevens, do you have any further modifications you're interested in making?
Mr. Chairman, no further. I'd certainly be willing to listen to any suggestions that anyone has along the lines we've been talking about, but I'm comfortable with this bill as it is.
Representative Coghill?
Chairman, then I'd go ahead and we move House Bill, CS House Bill 37, version C, with accompanying fiscal note of $169,000 and beyond. Anyway, accompanying fiscal note, move that we move it.
Any objection? Hearing none, House Bill 37, C version, is moved out of committee with individual recommendations. We have now before us House Bill 41. Is anybody here to speak on House Bill 101? All right. We'll continue the hearing on 41. I want to open the hearing on House Bill 101, and we will continue. Is anyone here that or online that cannot come back later on or be an inconvenience to speak on this one another time? All right, then we'll continue the hearing on House Bill 101. We now have before us House Bill 41. And I understand Barbara Miklos is online. Are you there, Barbara?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'm here in Anchorage.
I'll bet you've been fascinated by this discussion we've been having, right?
Yeah, it has been fascinating, sir.
All right, who's going to make the presentation?
Mr. Chairman, I'll begin. It's my understanding, we have a copy of the committee substitute for House Bill 41, HIP, and the copy we have is F. And we had already talked most about the bill. I think that this changes something from the original legislation. Sunsets certain provisions, sort of re-sunsets provisions that have to do with Social Security numbers, as well as provisions that deal with our financial institutional data match program, which is a program that we've just begun to implement. And it also adds some provisions that the Senate has had in there that would, if an employer did not provide information on new hire reporting, that there would not be a separate cause for civil action. For the most part, we have no trouble with the changes that are in this legislation. I know that your committee F subsets the legislation in 2 years, and we, of course, prefer the 5 years, but we wouldn't object to the 2-year sunset.
All right. Are there any questions for Barbara? All right, I have a proposed amendment of my own. Randy, can you?
Sure can.
Can you explain to us what this does?
Sure can.
Here's the
this is Randy Lorenz, who's the HESS committee aide, who's been doing such a good job for us. All right. Everybody have before you the F.1? All right. What?
For the record, my name is Randy Lorenz, HESS committee aide, and aide to Representative Fred Dyson. Before you is an amendment to House Bill 41, which what it does presently, if an individual makes this payment through his employer, let's say during the first couple days of February, and then because of the automatic pay cycles, his March paycheck falls around the 25th, 26th, or 27th of February, then that's considered by CSCD as an overpayment, and it will either go to any back pay to either the state or the federal government. It will not be forwarded to the March payment, which was the intent. As a result, the individual come March gets the fact that he is now in the rears for not paying March. He goes to the employer and he says, I paid it in February 27th. The problem is the CSCD's computers are not forward-looking to make sure that that has been taken care of prior to making the state or federal payments. This amendment requires any payment that comes in the last 10 days of the month to be placed towards the next month's fiscal requirement for that individual, if that month has been taken care of. In other words, if the February payment has been paid and the check comes on the 26th or the 27th of February, they must apply it to March unless that individual signs a waiver allowing it to go to those state rearages, either the federal or the state payments.
Any questions of Mr. Lorenz? Let the record reflect that both Representative Wilson and Cisna look puzzled.
Well, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Representative Dyson. I think this is excellent, and it makes perfect sense to me, and I was wondering where Barbara stood on it. Sounds great.
Yeah. Did you hear the question, Barbara?
Yes, I did. I'm going to say a couple words, and then John Maloney, who's the charge of our data processing section, will kind of talk about federal distribution requirements. I don't think that we disagree with the intent. I think that there are a few cases where this becomes a problem. But I need to clarify a couple things. For one thing, if there are no arrearages on the case, then the money is applied to future payments. So that is already happening. If there is no arrearage at all, the money is applied to future payments. Also, I just want to clarify that often when we talk about there being an arrearages on the case, which means that there's money owed, that in fact we're talking money owed to the custodial parent. We're not talking money owed to the state and federal government. And in fact, our new distribution requirements say that we do have to pay the custodial parent first. The biggest concern, and John is going to speak to this, is that this is not consistent with the requirements that we have from the federal government in terms of how we distribute the money that we collect. So I'll just ask John to speak to that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Malley. I'm the data processing manager for the division. And I would like to bring to your attention 45 CFR 302.51A1, and if you'll bear with me, I'll just read it real quickly in case you don't have it in front of you. It says, for the purpose of distribution, a 4D case amounts collected except as provided under paragraph A3 of this section shall be treated first as payments on the required support obligation for the month in which the support was collected. And if any amounts are collected which are in excess of such amounts, these excess amounts shall be treated as amounts which represent payments on the required support obligation for previous months. There's also a B to that same section that says if an amount collected support represents payments on the required support obligation for future months, that amount shall be applied to such future months. However, no such amount shall be applied to a future month unless amounts have been collected which fully satisfy the support obligation assigned under Section 403A8 of the Act for the current month and all past months. So the concern there is that this is somewhat in contradiction to what the federal distribution requirement out of the federal regulation has us doing.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, so what you're saying is that the way it's currently set up is that anytime funds come in, if they're behind at all, either in last month or previous months, first of all, it's going to be applied to the current month that it came into, and then if they were 2 months ago in arrears, it goes to that before it goes forward.
That's correct. It always goes to the current month first, any past months, and then it can go to future months.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Coghill and then Cisna.
In this particular language, it looks like what we're doing is we're asking the obligor to then write a statement saying that that's the case. So, John, is there cases where arrearages would be in contest in such a way that that this would be effective for getting the money to the next months, forward months?
Through the chair to Representative Coghill, I can't think of a time where, I guess if there was a contest of what the arrears were that were established on the case, if the non-custodial parent was contesting the fact that there were any arrears on the case and felt that that money was really being paid simply to pay ongoing and they didn't agree with the arrears, I would suspect that would be a situation where it might arise.
So then having this, if we have him signing an affidavit or some kind of a letter affirming that that could happen, then it's just bringing him into the loop or her into the loop.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, that's all it would do. I mean, that I still don't think that that solves this problem with the federal requirement, because that's just the individual telling us what his intention or her intention happened to be at that particular time. But our distribution based on all the federal distribution requirements are based on when we collect the money and how the case appears at that particular time.
Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess when I read this, my confusion was it felt like the amendment language was saying that you'd always be paying forward only, unless somebody's, so you'd have no way of ever recouping the money that the government, the public money, would never get recuperated. I mean, it's the way I read it. I mean, that wasn't your intent.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Sisna. The intent was that the money go as is intended for the support of the children.
Right.
And that any money that's intended to go to pay back obligations would be separate from that, so that the money intended to go for the children, current child support payments, would always go to that and not be diverted, any portion of it, to go to pay a back debt on the child support. Intention is to keep the money going to the children. John, Chairman Dyson, what are the circumstances in which these checks are coming from the employer as opposed to the obligor sending a check himself?
Chairman Tyson, that part of the problem is distribution rules are a little different or a little more specific, I guess I should say, for those things that come from an employer versus those things that come from the individual. There's somewhat more latitude. For example, the ones that come from an employer must be distributed by the distribution requirements within 2 days of the date that we receive them. We have somewhat longer than that if it's paid individually rather than through the employer. with the employer's checks, there are times when that can be considered, even though we might receive it in this month, we could in fact say that it was for the prior month if it was actually withheld from the pay in a prior month. So there's somewhat of a difference between distribution requirements when it comes from an employer withholding order than it is when it's a voluntary payment that the individual either walks in or mails into the office.
That was very useful information, but missed the point of my question. Why is the employer involved?
Mr. Chairman, I really don't understand the question.
Okay, the
employer.
All right, the employer doesn't owe child support. The employee owes child support. Why is the employer sending checks for the support of children that aren't the employer's children?
Representative Dyson, this is Barbara. It was in 1994 or 1996 that the Congress again required all the states to develop legislation, which Alaska had, I think, already in place, that says that the child support will be automatically done through wage withholding. I think the intent in this whole having the employer withhold the money, which made a dramatic increase in terms of child support, was that it would be much more consistent to withholding on federal income tax. It would just be a normal course of business. So it is the common way that we get child support these days is through wage withholding.
All right. That answers that question, is Dyson. Is it indeed true that if, as Mr. Lorenz says, that the employer mails the check on the 22nd or the 23rd, and you apply that to the month in which you receive it, take the difference, any overages, and apply it to back debts, and then the next month, when the person isn't paid up to date, because from Mr. Lorenz's perspective, or maybe mine, you've misused the funds or misapplied them, but does then the obligor get a penalty in interest as a result of your having misapplied his money?
First of all, you're talking about somebody who already has arrears, so they're already behind in their child support payments. The penalties would not increase in future months when they continue to be behind. If they were never behind in the first place, then there would be absolutely no penalties at all because that would be applied to the future. But the case that you're talking about is it could only happen if somebody already was behind in their child support.
All right, Dyson again. And are any of these arrearages that you're paying for actually there to reimburse the state for welfare and ASTAP and so on funds that have been given to the custodial parent?
Yes, some of them may be. Some of them are also for the custodial parent. Under our new distribution requirements from the federal government, we're required, and we're working on programming the computer right now, we're required to pay the custodial parent first for the arrearages, unless the custodial parent is on public assistance. And then the state, in all cases, would be getting the child support payments. We are only, again, I guess, but yes, it is true. Some of the money might go to the state or federal government.
All right. Thanks, Barb. And is there any way that we could craft this so that if indeed the obligor is behind on child support payments, any overages would go to that? To the custodial parent and the children, but none of it would go to pay for, reimburse the state for welfare or ATAP or whatever until the obligor authorized monies from his payroll deductions or wrote checks to make up those arrearages that are owed to the state.
Chairman Dyson, the child support payments that people pay now, unless there's an instance of hardship, do include excess money to pay back on arrears. So that is a given. And therefore, I don't know, in the way that you described it, it's not just that we only collect the monthly support ongoing. Unless somebody's very poor, we try to collect so much on arrears. The other thing that I need to mention is that if the obligor is continually paying on the future and never paying on the arrears, they will then be gathering more interest as the money moves along. And so in some ways, this would work to their disadvantage.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Dyson. I think that the obligor is capable of recognizing that and making that decision themselves. I just got a note here. Sharon O'Dell.
For the record, my name is Sharon O'Dell. I'm a legislative aide for Representative Coring's office. In 1999, Representative Coring's office handled two such constituent cases like this. Both of them were garnishment cases. Both of them had ATEP debt. In one case, CSED would not reverse the second payment, stating it couldn't get the money back from the public assistance office. The child and the mother had nothing to live on for that month, and the rent was past due. In the second case, they backed out the posting, re-receipted it, and told it was because it was a military check they could do that, and they reissued a payment to the custodial parent. When CSED applies the second payment received in the calendar month, because it's either received at the first one's received at the first of the month and the second's received at the last of the month, the state robs the kids of the very support that it says that it gives them. Even when this only occurs on rare occasions, like I say, we had two in 1999, those children affected by that, it's often devastating to that family when the money is needed to pay the rent or to buy the groceries. The needs for that child should outweigh any set of written procedures that we have when those written procedures override common sense. When we say that there's two payments received and they're obviously, they're especially when they're the same amount, one's received first or second day of the month, one's received